you where I'm going. I'm not sure of where I've been, but I know I must keep traveling till my road comes to an end. I'm out here on my journey trying to make the most of it. I'm a puzzle, I must figure out where all my pieces fit.
From Brooklyn, New York, this is Jarring Segue, an in-depth look at issues sent in by you, our listeners, and cobbled together, not in Cobble Hill, we're not in Cobble Hill, but that's a place in Brooklyn, cobbled together in a really jarring way. As always, I am your host, Beth Hicks, and I am joined by...
Scott Austin.
And normally this is where we would hear Johan Karabi, but Johan could not be with us today, so we are so grateful to be joined by the lovely and talented...
Sarah Reif.
My goodness, she does have a great voice.
She does.
It's fantastic.
I just want to sometimes call her up and ask her to read.
I am not, in fact, a man, just in case you were wondering.
I want her to read to me, but she'd be embarrassed by the stories I choose.
I do think you have a more masculine voice than Johan, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Johan, we miss you. We miss you. But, you know,
yes.
You're right.
Oh, sorry.
You might be needing other special guests in the future now.
No, Johan knows we love him. That's why we can tease, right? Right.
Right.
So we're so excited.
I challenge you to find a spot where Johan says right in one of our other episodes and just plunk that in there.
So, I will absolutely.
So he agrees.
I will do my best.
Don't worry, Beth. I won't go off on you like I did when we had the laughing French school children.
If anybody wonders what that is, well, just go back and listen to our previous podcast and listen. I think it might have been number 7 or 8, and listen to Scott and Johan, mostly Scott, challenge me to a sound effects. I don't even know.
Find wild monkeys mating. It sounds like this.
Yes.
Yeah.
My favorite
you
was...
You really looked like a Muppet when you did that. It was really delightful. I wish that they could see it.
My Sound Muppet face.
Muppet face.
My Sound antagonistic face. Muppet face.
So I'm so excited because we are talking today about travel, and our lovely and intrepid Scott Austin just got back from Alaska.
You should see my tan. It's amazing.
And Sarah is actually traveling to us from not quite as far as Alaska.
Yes. I'm here from Syracuse.
Woo-hoo.
So.
Yeah, Syracuse. Yeah, upstate. And I traveled all the way from a mile down the road. So we are all travelers in our own right. Today's theme is about travel. And let's get started with... the best and the brightest of topics. That's putting it on you.
No, I think we all agreed that our best and brightest topic came from my friend Genevieve, who is, she's pretty much a nomad. So when I thought our theme is travel, I thought Genevieve.
Yes.
She talked about how a friend of hers was discussing Yellowstone National Park and how some people who drive through it still call that experiencing nature or like driving on a safari in Africa. But she wants to know, is there an authentic or right way to experience place?
Sarah, you are the guest, and I want you to feel free to jump right in. Please interrupt me a lot. That's what Johan does. I won't feel right if you don't interrupt me a lot.
You're not doing your job if Beth doesn't tell you to shut it.
That's good.
And also if I don't choke back tears. So please, Sarah, as our guest, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I would say, just because I'm not in the athletic sense very adventurous, that I tend to err on the side of wanting to believe that you can still experience nature by driving to places. Like, I have been to Acadia many times, and I've done a lot of the hikes there, but I do not have the endurance or the ability to hike Cadillac Mountain. So I drove up it, and I still got to see, you know, the sun hit the first sunrise place in the United States. And just because I didn't nearly die by hiking there in the dark morning hours, I think I still experienced it. But it is probably a lot more badass to be like, yeah, I biked up there. I did it, but...
Yeah, we just... Sarah and I were walking around earlier today, and there were some tourists riding bicycles on the sidewalk on a one-way street going the wrong way.
I just ran cobblestones.
And then they were on the cobblestones, like, instead of on a bike path street. And
rude.
It was just kind of like, you're kind of experiencing Brooklyn the right way, but you are breaking so many rules that you can get a ticket for, actually. Yeah. But So, you know, I made a snide comment, rolling my eyes at tourists not doing things right, and then proceeded to trip on one of the cobblestones and scrape up my whole right side. So it was karma. So because of karma, today I will say, you know what? You are experiencing a place, and you're not going to ever experience a place like you do when you live there. I will not ever tell anyone I've lived in Alaska, even though I was there for 5 days. You know, I experienced Mount Edgecombe, even though I did not hike up the dormant volcano. I kayaked pretty close to it. And that was being athletic enough for me. Kayaking was nice. A workout.
Yeah.
3 hours in a kayak.
Yeah.
Ocean kayaking, even. So the water is like, you fight it. But it was amazing and beautiful, and it's an experience that I've had. Who's to say that there is a right way to experience something?
I walked by Colin Farrell once, and I like to say I experienced him and let people draw their own conclusions, because we almost brushed shoulders.
Like when I tell people I had coffee with Michelle Williams because she was at the table near me.
Exactly. Well, is that you did. Semantically, you are correct.
It was part of your environmental experience while you were in that place.
Precisely.
In a setting other than New York City, our tables would have been considered the same table, but since we just cram seating in here.
Yeah, that's true. I don't believe in authentic travel, because for one thing, not everybody can afford to do the same things. Not everybody is physically, I think you put up a great point, not everybody is physically able to do the same things. And so for people to scoff when people, when there are those who, you know, drive through, yeah, great. What if somebody literally cannot walk through the mountains but still would like to experience the mountains by driving through them? So like when people get that way, my feeling is, why do you care? Experience it the best way you want to, whether it's hiking or biking or driving, but to assume that your way is more or authentic or someone else's is less authentic is just arrogance, and it's unnecessary.
Although I will say, in Sitka there are all these cruise ships that come into town, and the people aren't sleeping there. They get off a cruise ship for the 2-3 hours. Mm-hmm. They see, like, they've got a few choices. You can kayak, and you kayak for, it's this very little kayak path that they take and turn around, or you can do a hike and bike in those 3 hours, and it's very manicured and manufactured. And that, to me, I feel is a little inauthentic when you're on a cruise ship and you're just hopping from town to town for 3 hours and then going back on this luxurious
boat. And it's almost like a bridge.
Ridiculous.
Like there's only so much you can get done in one day. Mm-hmm. So you have to do like snippets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would argue that maybe there's more immersive ways to be in a place, and that to, you know, hike, you know, to hike down the Grand Canyon, that's a more immersive experience. You're going to literally be looking up. I mean, I would like to do that someday actually, rather than just driving up to it and looking over it. But again, authentic to me is just, it's indefinable, and because of that, I think I said indefinable, I meant to say undefinable, I don't care, it's the summer, I
go on summer break. It's non-definable.
You can't be defined. Eh? Just duh? I feel like there's a sense that we all agree that, you know, don't be a jerk about it, but I definitely agree with you, like the whole going out for an hour. You're not going to really get to experience a place if you're just there for an hour doing the whole quick
thing. It's like just the tip. I had to. Someone did.
So, yeah.
And I'm glad you did, because that was sexy. Can you say that again?
Just the tip. Just to see how it feels in Alaska.
I am going to play this back. I'm going to play this back for myself later. I'm so sorry. I know you probably didn't want to know that, but
that's all right. My 8th grade art teacher told me that I should be a phone sex operator. She said 1-900 number, so it's not like she got fired for it or anything.
Oh, wait, when you were in 8th grade.
When I was in 8th grade, my female art teacher said, you really should consider working for... I had this same voice as an 8th grader, which you can imagine was really fortunate for my dating life, considering the level of puberty my male classmates had reached.
Yeah, she sounds appropriate.
Yeah, it was great. Mm. She was... Whatever.
So
there's still time.
Sarah's friend Lindsay asked us, "How do we pay off, or do you pay off college loans or travel in your 20s?"
I would travel. I would travel.
Your loans are always going to be there.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That's true. They've got a lower rate than if you were to take out a personal loan to go travel later.
Right. Yep. That's a good way to think of it.
I mean, I don't. My feeling is you don't ignore your college loans because they will accrue interest and all that sort of thing. But if you can,
I've never paid mine.
What you don't see is me flipping the bird.
I just run from Sally Mae.
Just run.
Who I've learned is a big burly man that looks like a tax collector, debt collector rather. No, I do pay my student loans. But I am very fortunate also to not. My master's was paid for by the school district I worked at, and my
undergrad
tuition was paid for by my mother working at the college. When I talk about paying student loans, I'm like, oh, well, this is... I've got a few housing loans.
Yeah, I like that there's a plane. I don't know if you could hear that, sweet listeners, but there's a plane going by. It just felt so evocative and perfect for what we're talking about right now. I'm a big believer that if you can afford it and still pay off at least part of your college loans every month, you know, set up a whatever, you know, small, like, set up a payment plan, that traveling in your 20s is just such a good time to do it. You'll never be at a better age. If you're not married, you know, if you don't have kids, which more and more people don't in their 20s, gather up friends and go see as many places as you can and do it while you're young. Even though I will say my grandmother didn't start traveling till she was 70, and she did more traveling in 10 years than some people will do their whole lives. So it's, so there's no wrong time to start, but if you can do it in your 20s, I think it's a great idea.
My goal is I have the daunting deadline of turning 30 next summer, and I'm trying to squeeze in like all the traveling I should have been doing. I've done a lot of traveling to visit my friends that are all over, but I haven't done any international travel.
Yeah.
And I was that douchey person who loved my college town so much that I couldn't bear to study abroad because I couldn't be away from the scene.
Well, you are a Penn State alum, and you are a special breed of proud of your
Pennsylvania girl right here. Yeah, older brother went to Penn State, so Nittany Lions, but
so it was hard for me to leave, so I never really experienced that, but I'm like looking into teaching English at Cambridge next summer, and like by doing that I'll be getting paid to be traveling abroad, and I'll get to like take students to some cities, and then a couple of my student teaching girlfriends, one of whom submitted a question today, so that's exciting, we're planning like a big trip for our 30s, so I'm getting there. I might travel a lot in my 30s since I'm still single.
Look, I just want to tell you that in your 30s, your life ends. I mean, you can't...
Here we go.
You can't,
that's true. I'm on borrowed time.
I'm 35, and I do feel like every time I go to a new destination, there is some kind of... There's a shaman who usually comes out and anoints me as the unmarried 35-year-old, and it's just... It's tough.
Carrie asked us, do you travel to party, relax, go somewhere historical? What motivates you when you're picking a travel place?
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the above.
You gotta pick a place that has a little bit of each.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
See, I feel just by being away from where you are, you're going to relax. Those places where you go to relax, like a beach resort, that I don't find as... Like, I'd rather go to Seattle, where there's some history, there is... some party I can find, different bars, different breweries, different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also relaxing because I'm not near my home.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'd rather do that, pick somewhere like that, than pick, like, I'm just going to go to Cocoa Beach, Florida.
Yeah. And
sit out and tan. That's not relaxing.
That doesn't appeal to me as much either. Yeah. Like, if I don't feel like I have, like, a set itinerary of things I can do. It depends on who I'm with, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm getting ready to go to Ocean City with my, like, really close group of friends next week. And with them, like, I can lay on the beach all day and do nothing because they're so entertaining. But I wouldn't be able to do that with, you know, my family or by myself. And that wouldn't appeal to me.
Yeah, people who go on the... I won't say I don't understand the going to, like, the all-inclusive resorts with the, you know, the pools and whatever. It sounds like you mentioned Dante, it sounds like my personal hell to have nothing to do but be in a pool or be on a beach and drink and be surrounded by people in their bathing suits. And you know my version of the sun. So I'd be the one who'd be like huddled under
hoodie.
My God, like
she'd look homeless because she does, you know, wear a trench coat in the sun.
I do, and I wear like my big granny glasses and my everything.
Oh, your granny glasses.
I got another pair, by the way.
Oh, thank God.
Replace them. Thank you.
Good, because I had returned the seeing eye dog that I bought you to go with your granny glasses. But now I can go get him back. That's
yay.
Good.
I hate those places. I find, and I agree with you, I find travel, unless something goes terribly wrong, which it can, I find travel very relaxing because my brain is occupied with something mm-hmm. other than bills and jobs. And
you don't think about...
Nope. You think about where can we explore and what can we see and who can we meet.
Whereas if I'm laying on a beach, I'm like laying there and getting a tan. It's like, oh, this is nice. Now I'm going to start thinking about this.
Right.
And there's only so much day drinking I can do.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, I can do a fair amount of day drinking, but...
That's my favorite kind.
And then...
I'm not allowed to whisper, but I said that's my favorite kind. That was great. I think I have a future in podcasting.
Well, Sarah, you and I have traveled together, so
yeah.
And I know we have had some interesting experiences.
Yes, we have.
I had to teach Sarah how to drive my standard car that the antenna had just fallen off of.
And now every time I pass that spot on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, Northeast Extension, I pour one out from whatever I'm drinking.
Pour one out
in homage to Scott's antenna.
Yeah, the antenna just fell off my car. We just heard this noise and we were like, what the? And saw it dangling there in the back by a thread.
That was exciting.
And then that same trip, I got some kind of food poisoning or something. I was throwing up every hour on the hour. And so I was like, we had like a drink.
Awful. Yeah, I knew you weren't just drunk.
At a concert. We'd gone to see Ingrid Michaelson, the hardcore rockers that we are.
Yeah,
she is wonderful.
We were wild. She was great live.
She was. She's so cute.
Yes.
I just want to put her in my pocket and
did
hang
out
with her.
Did she give you a sweater?
I wish.
She talked about it.
She talked about it.
And her band, like, they did, like, a little Chinese fire drill, like, all swapped instruments, and that was so impressive to me, because you don't always see,
While covering Britney Spears'
yes,
Toxic.
Yes, that's right.
But, yeah, I was throwing up every hour on the hour, and I could not drive home.
No.
And, I drove some of the way, and then I got us to the top of a hill off 81. And I was like, okay, it's easy to start going down a hill. You do that, and then I slept for an hour, and Sarah saved me, so...
And then when I went to stop for us to switch again when it was going to be time to us getting home to traffic, I got off an exit on 81 North and just kind of rolled into a field, and Scott is like, maybe use the brakes. I don't know. Perhaps. I was like, how do you stop these things? Yeah. Is it the same?
I had the same issue. My ex had a drive standard, and he was teaching me how to drive. And I remember thinking, oh, brakes in a standard work just like they do in a manual.
I don't
know why it didn't hit me that, of course, all you're going to do, like, it would be supremely dangerous if a standard didn't just have a brake that you could stomp on when necessary. And so I had the same thing where I had to remind myself, oh, that's right, I can brake. It's okay. You can still brake just like you normally do. PA Turnpike's a good place to learn, though, because it's nice, open, and flat. You can just go.
Yeah.
Scott just had to get us through. I didn't want to be any place where I had to, like, keep slowing down. Like, you know, that was a good... It was.
But I would still say Sarah Reif is an amazing traveling partner. Lots of laughing, seeking out good food.
Mm-hmm. Top three, what makes a good traveling companion? Right now on this podcast, we are going to tell the world, or the five listeners, top three.
Good snacks.
One.
Good taste in music.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, like our Mariah Carey singing.
And I think there are two types of travelers. Those who plan everything ahead of time and really know your whole agenda down to the minute. And then there are people who want to get somewhere, wake up in the morning, and just look for a good cup of coffee and a good cafe. And then sit at the cafe reading... maybe a not-for-tourist guide or an actual I'm-a-tourist guide,
mm-hmm.
and figure out where they want to go next that day based on where they are, what the weather is.
The
okay,
moon.
Fine. I really wanted to walk through Luxembourg Gardens before going to the Louvre today, but it's raining. So fuck that.
Readjust.
I'm just going to go to the Louvre and then see a movie in French without English subtitles and see if I can make it through that. You know, so to me, I'm more of the latter, and I think I probably annoy the former. Sometimes I think they can make great travel partners because of that, but
it can be good to have one of each.
But I do, I'm sure I annoy type A travelers.
I'm pretty type A, and you don't annoy me because I trust you enough to explore responsibly, and
well,
I know
good.
That you have good taste. But I think to have a perfect travel companion, they need to be able to rally no matter what. Because I can usually rally pretty well, and I'm like I will get up as early in the morning as I have to, stay up as late as I have to make sure that you can get everything accomplished. And some of my friends who I've traveled with are like more lackadaisical about leaving in a timely fashion and being ready to go. And I'm like, let's go! We gotta hit the road! So that is, you know, I'm just more of that impulsive, let's go and do things! We're here!
Yeah. I think my favorite quality in a travel companion, I mean, if I were giving three...
Tramp comp sounds like...
I don't know why tramp came.
You can have free sex. This one's on me. I'm a tramp comp.
You've comped my tramp.
Just the tip. I'm going to say that as
many times as you can. I mean, if I was giving my three, one would be similar taste in what we want to explore, because if you're wildly different and you're not... and you both aren't open to new things, then one of you's going to be miserable, then the other one's going to be miserable, and nobody's going to be happy. So either you're both really okay with anything, or you have similar tastes of the things you like to see. The second one is, for me personally, is people who are able to engage with strangers and people who they don't know, because I'm the kind of person who, when I go somewhere, I will... Don't start shaking your head yet.
I'm shaking
don't
my head
shake
at you.
Don't shake your head yet.
Let me
throw my three before you start negating them.
Okay, go.
Please?
Go.
So, engaging with people around you, because that always makes it more fun for me when I travel, is getting to know the people. This is, when Johan's not here, Scott has to ramp
I got to know Beth very quickly when she was up in Syracuse, and that was, I made it very... You know.
And my third, Mr. Snarky Pants.
I always sit next to people like you on planes, and you drive me fucking crazy.
I don't want to be a best friend on a plane. No, you need to... Okay, you need to just dial it back for a second, swallow your words, and let me finish.
That's not what we do here.
Because... No, let me go back to number two for a second, because here's the thing. I'm actually one of those people on a plane who usually has my headphones on, my Kindle out,
good.
And I'm
you're
quiet.
Fine. At a bar, fine.
Exactly.
Talk,
I don't...
Off.
No, no,
great.
No. When I'm talking about traveling and meeting and talking to strangers and meeting people, I'm not talking about when we're on the train, when we're on the plane, whatever. That's actually getting there. I'm talking about when we're in the bar, when we're waiting in line for a concert, you know, when we're out, when we're somebody's...
Waiting in line for... Ugh.
I swear, you are such
we
a
We engaged in conversation with the douchey stranger behind us when we went to see Adele.
We did.
That was
we
necessary.
Did.
You are grump. Anyway, and number three.
I am a grump. I'm an introverted grump.
You are a grump.
That is what
when
my tombstone
you,
will say.
That's
and,
what I think.
And I would also like to point out that I'm sure I don't get it right every time, but one of the things I do consider it something that I'm good at is that I try as hard as I can to read people. So I try never to engage with someone who doesn't want to be engaged. I always try to make
someone
sure
someone sitting there with their head in their hands,
yeah,
like
yeah.
crying,
hey,
and Beth's
hey,
like,
hey,
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 hey, hey,
hey I just hey. Got this sticker. Hey!
So apparently
look, it's a unicorn!
Want to be in a picture with me?
Let's do a selfie! Besties!
So apparently in this situation, I'm five. And my third, because I am going to get my third, is someone who can roll with the punches, because...
Hey, want to go roll with some punches outside? I've got my big wheel. Do you want to do it? It's got Barbie on it. It's great. Let's go play.
This is jarring indeed.
Sarah, you need to, if you're going to fill in for Johan, laughing and Scott is not enough. You
I'm
need
sorry.
To join in.
All right.
And turn on me.
Oh, I can't. I'm not. Scott told me that you were hoping for an argumentative special guest, and he's like, oh, I'm not.
No.
I'm a yes person.
We can never replace Johan.
No, no. So, yeah, so someone who can, because the thing is, sometimes you're going to get a flat tire. Sometimes the concert that you were sure you could get tickets to is sold out. Sometimes the place you were so excited to go, they're closed for renovations. Like,
or because it's Monday.
Or because it's Monday, exactly.
That's what we're learning today. Yes. Botanic Gardens closed. Museum's closed.
Yes.
Brooklyn Brewery closed.
Monday in New York is tough. Monday is definitely tough. So anyway, so just that's a travel warning for all of you. Mondays in New York, kind of tough.
I know that now.
It's true. Have you ever hooked up with a stranger on a trip whom you've never seen or heard from again?
God, I wish.
Friend Mike asked that.
I wish, Mike. I wish, Mike. Next time, find me a stranger, Mike. Next time I come up to Syracuse.
My roommate's currently in Ireland, and everybody in our neighborhood thinks we're raging lesbians together, which, you know, is fine, because she's great, and if somebody thought I was gay with her, that's fine. I would be complimented, but we're not, and it's hard to find men that way. But I told her to bring home two Irishmen to live with us, so I hope to hook up with someone from another country and see them all the time.
Mom and Dad, if you are listening, please skip. Stop listening. Thank you. When I was in Ireland studying abroad, I had like 3 days between I had done 3 weeks in London and then 3 weeks in Dublin. And we had some travel time. And I went up the coast with my friends Maggie and Kate, who are lovely, lovely women. And everyone thought we were family because we all have the same coloring and we get along very well. And so we went up the coast of England for a while on a train where we had all just bought the new Harry Potter. Book 6 had just come out. And so reading it, taking off from, you know, King's Cross Station, getting on a train, going up the coast and reading our Harry Potter. As the English countryside rolled, we were pretending we were on the Hogwarts Express as, you know, people in our 20s. And then we took a ferry across into Dublin. We stayed at a bed and breakfast that night. We rented a car. We drove to Cork, where I had another friend doing a theater program. So I was going to stay in Cork for two or three nights, and then make my way back to Dublin. They were dropping me off in Cork and then driving to where Maggie's family is from and Kate's family. And so they were doing a little Ireland road trip, and I just stayed in Cork an extra day. And first, when we were in Cork, the woman we checked in, she's like, "Oh, that Barry family, nice and Irish." And Maggie, who is so proud of her Irish heritage, was like, "Oh, actually, we're not a family, we're friends, but, you know, I'm Irish too. My name's Maggie Cassidy." And she's like, "Oh, that Cassidy is from this part of Ireland." She's like, "And what's your name?" And I was like, "Scott Austin." She goes, "Austin." British. And I was like, "Yeah, I've got some heritage, the Hickeys," which I loved growing up with a grandma Hickey, by the way.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
But so my night that I was alone in Cork staying in a hostel, I did go out to one of the gay bars in Cork, Ireland, and I did spend most of that night making out and doing a little over clothes feeling through through the wee hours of the morning.
The wee hours of the morning with an Irish man.
And then
I love it.
And then after that trip, I did what I think is one of the best things I've ever done, and or poor planning. I gave myself a week after my course ended before my flight home, and had to figure out what to do while I was studying in Dublin. Like, oh shit, next week, class ends. What am I going to do? But I had a friend from undergrad who was living in Paris and another one in Southampton. I just went and stayed with them each for a couple days. And when I was with my friend in Paris, we went to this party one night. And my French is phenomenal when I am drunk.
Madame Guillet would be proud.
Très bien, monsieur.
Scott and I had the same French teacher.
And she should also stop listening.
Everyone who thinks of Scott as an innocent young man, stop listening right now.
It's true.
Crickets.
And members of PETA, please stop listening.
And Beyonce and the Pope.
And George Zimmerman.
Thank you.
I went to this party with Ian, and I flirted with some French men and went home with one. He was a med student in France. He was very attractive and my French is phenomenal when I'm drunk at night, and really not so good when I'm hungover in the morning. but that was my, and I don't, when I make lists of people I've slept with, I do have to write guy in Ireland on the list.
And guy in France.
And guy in Paris.
French doctor guy.
Why can't you say Guy?
Yeah, I'll give him a stereotypical name. Seamus and Pierre.
Yes! Do it.
Jean Michel.
So,
let's make your list.
Not
right
white. Yes. It'll take too long.
And,
big whore.
And resume listening all of the people who thought Scott was.
But you shouldn't be listening to hear her say that, so.
So basically, we're in a black hole of not listening versus listening. I'm so sorry.
Speaking of black holes, what happens when you travel back to somewhere you have your childhood memories about? Mm. What happens?
Well, that's hard for me because I live back in the town where I grew up. So
did you ever have like a family vacation you did that you had a great memory of? We went to Toronto when I was a kid, and so to me it was like this amazing place. Then when I went back there after having lived in New York for a little while, I was like, oh, this is a small little city. Yeah, and what a nice little town this is. And which I'm totally a city snob. Like, I don't understand Boston. I'm like, city? I can see the top of every building. I guess that's more D.C. But I do understand that not everywhere in the world is New York City. And that's not great for everyone and everything. But when I went to downtown Toronto a couple summers ago, last summer, I guess, I was like, huh, I remembered it differently, but it wasn't like a weird travel back to my childhood memory.
I guess mine would be just, you know, going to the stereotypical childhood trip to Disney World, and then I went back as a 22-year-old, like, 1 month out of college graduate with my two college roommates, and the one who, her family had a timeshare down there, so we were staying at some condo resort thing, and her parents had bought her tickets to go to the park most days, and my friend and I were like, we don't have that money, so we'll buy like 1 day's park ticket. And we were fretting for the weeks leading up to the trip, like, what the hell are two 22-year-old women gonna do in Disney World? And we ended up meeting this group of guys from Philadelphia in the bar, and the next day they picked us up in an old cop car and a minivan, and we were like, this is gonna be a gangbang situation, but it was not. We did the Around the World bar tour with them in Epcot. I don't remember what happened for several of the countries.
Hopefully just the tip.
I threw up on a tree outside of Epcot, and their theme that year was like where the millions of miracles come from. And my one friend that we were with is now married to one of those guys. So,
you're hung up.
That certainly reshaped my, she doesn't like to tell people they met at Disney World. She just said they met in a bar. But I'm like, that is the best story
ever. No, it's
story
better that
ever.
Way. I love it.
Are you kidding me? It's the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, it was awesome.
It is the Magic Kingdom. Yeah. And so you tried to hook up with a stranger on a trip, but your friend ended up getting married to one of them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I did hook up with a stranger. I did hook up with one of the guys from that group. But
you couldn't escape him because
yes,
the other hookup,
I was,
she didn't know how to cut and run.
I was sort of like, I still have not. I've only seen him once since, and it was supremely awkward, especially because I might have passed out during the experience.
Which is the subject of another podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Narcolepsy.
Oops.
Our next theme.
Yeah, I don't have... We basically, when we were young, we would go for a week to the beach, somewhere either in Delaware or Jersey. And I used to visit, you know, my aunt, uncle occasionally in Virginia. And that was kind of the extent of traveling I did as a kid. And we just were not a traveling family. And so for me, I don't have nostalgia about places. I don't have childhood nostalgia about anywhere. Mm-hmm. And even the beach, like going back to the boardwalk, we went enough times up until I was, I think, like 16 or 17 that I didn't even have that feeling of going back and all that sort of thing. So for me, like, I don't have... It's so sad to think about that. Like, the first time we went to Disney World was I was 17. So, like, I don't have any of the, oh my gosh, this is so different than I remember. You know, the only time I've ever felt that was, you know, kind of the more typical going back to my high school or my elementary school or something like that and being like, oh my gosh, this is, it really is true. I do feel so big and everything looks so small and, you know, the kids are so tiny and everything is so tiny. Exactly. So, like, yeah, for
me. A tiny toilet.
A little toilet. Oh, the wee little toilet. We're back in Ireland. We're back in Ireland. We're here. You're wee there, and the wee little toilet. But yeah, so I don't have those kind of memories for places that aren't associated with home.
Yeah, well, I think like we moved away from the home that I grew up in when I was the home I was born in. I was like 2 when we moved away, so mm-hmm. we would go back and visit the neighbor. But that for me doesn't really count. My home on Buttercup Lane.
That is so sweet.
My family moved away, and just a neighborhood away, really. But I did once drive past it, and this tree that I used to think was massive. I was like, oh, that's it? That's the tree?
That's the dream.
Huh. Yep. So I think you just remember things bigger in your...
Of course.
I was thinking, like, your values. And when we were talking about choosing destinations for partying versus relaxing versus historical, my parents were the queen and king of all our vacations had some sort of historical learning experience.
Yeah.
Like, my friends were going to Virginia Beach and wherever, and I'm like, I'm going to Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of money. I remember our big vacation, like, 1 5-year span was Mystic, Connecticut.
I went to Mystic.
Oh, need an old boat. And it was cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was born outside D.C., so we used to go to the Smithsonian. You know, we went to D.C. all the time as a kid. And I think, you know, I thought it was cool, but I had, like, a certain envy for, you know, my friends that were just going to, like, these places that seemed glamorous to me. And it's sort of like, I didn't live in a development growing up. I lived in an older house, and I thought my friends who lived in, like, these, you know, development houses were awesome. And now that I'm older, I'm so charmed by old houses, and I want to go on historical trips, and I'm glad my parents kind of shaped me that way. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, Helly and I think it's your friend Dan, Beth, asked us about food choices while traveling, either difficult food choices or a wonderful memory of eating experiences while we travel. So let's talk about food, because it's half the reason I do travel.
I mean, there are a lot of people who feel very strongly, which I can completely understand. I'm being very, like, middle of the road today.
You are. You're very, very diplomatic. I don't know how to deal
today,
with this.
And I don't like it, because usually I'm like, fucking stupid.
The polarization.
unless I'm threatening to follow you home and come in your peanut butter,
That was
delightful. A lot of people travel for the express purpose of going for the food. I mean, you know, whenever you explore and all that sort of thing. I am not much of a foodie. Like, the food matters to me, but I'm not. Shut up.
Why would you bother traveling?
We love food.
I just need to take a moment to remind you to suck it. Anyway, sorry.
Well, if it is a lovely, decadent popsicle that was just made somewhere, or maybe it was
just the tip.
A man yes. by just the river in Ireland. Then I am going for the food, and I will suck it.
Yes. I have enjoyed many a wonderful meal. Actually, one of the best, most memorable meals I ever had was in Leicester, in England. And Leicester has the second highest Indian population of anywhere other than London. And so the Indian food there is, of course, wonderful, and the restaurants are amazing. And Emma and I had gone home to visit her parents. She was a friend of mine who I met while I was studying abroad. And her father took us out to their favorite Indian restaurant, and they loaded the table. So it was her dad, her mom, I think her sister, and her, and such a sweet family, so lovely and welcoming and everything. And they just basically ordered a table of food. And I both enjoyed the meal more than I've enjoyed most meals of my life, mm-hmm. and also thought I was going to die at the end of it, just because I'd eaten so much. The food was excellent.
Thanks, imperialism.
Yeah.
Food giving.
Well, that's the, I know, exactly.
Giving Indian
exactly.
cuisine
to England,
London.
Exactly. Well, to Leicester, even. To Leicester. But yeah, that
I
was...
am imagining an Indian man named Lester.
Named Lester. Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I'm Lester. Russian. And you're like, really? Lester's?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Lester's. Lester's. Bar and grill. Mm-hmm.
I have such a passion for trying new ethnic foods because they are so hard to find sometimes where I live.
Yeah.
And my friend's boyfriend was traveling to India for work, and he's like a guy who doesn't like ranch dressing, which I don't. He's just a very picky eater. And
he's picky, but he doesn't like ranch. I thought the picky eaters liked ranch dressing.
It's like a picky eater who doesn't like Wonder Bread or,
yeah,
just or chicken fingers. Yes.
I think he doesn't like fried chicken either. I know. But he was going to India, and he just packed enough Clif Bars to sustain him. And I was like, I am going to drive over there and kick you right in your manhood, because that ain't right.
That's not right.
Not only that, the idea that in a country you can't find something. Yeah. I mean,
I was traveling in England, some days people would be like, ooh, can we go to McDonald's? And I'd be like, no, we cannot go to McDonald's.
Yeah, no.
I don't care if we're pressed for time, we will get a corner deli sandwich. Cause
the bakeries there with the pasties and stuff like that. And
I giggle
so
and say pasty every time.
Of course you do. Mm. Yeah, you do.
I'll get pasties.
Yeah. So it's funny because even though I don't go for the food, at the same time, I can't stand people who are like, oh yeah, I won't eat the food there. What? Yeah. Huh?
I was just traveling in Alaska, as we've mentioned, and the other day I had salmon that was like swimming around in the ocean the day before.
And
it had never been frozen, and it was just put on the grill, and it was so flaky and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We just, as our pre-podcast snack, had some smoked salmon I brought back.
Amazing.
On top of a Brooklyn bagel with cream cheese, which it really was
divine.
A lovely bi-coastal
best of both
snack.
Divine. Divine.
And so, like, that food was great. When I went to Japan, I loved eating everything when I lived there. Although I will say one of the most difficult experiences I had is after traveling 14 hours as like a 17-year-old on my biggest flight ever away from my parents for a month in this culture where I don't speak the language. The first night I got there, we had miso soup, and that's a pretty mild thing. Like my host family to serve me that was a great idea.
Yeah.
But the chunks of tofu, I just kept like gagging on them and I couldn't help it, and I made it through the soup, but I know they saw me get because they never served that again. And I felt so bad.
Aww,
I felt so bad, but I ate everything else.
It was just because your body was stressed from the travel.
Yeah.
That's totally normal.
And then I traveled to Texas with two of my colleagues, Mary Petrulis and Kathy Deeb. And these two brilliant and wonderful women, but one is a vegetarian and the other is Miss Chicken Finger USA.
Yep.
So going to Texas with a vegetarian and a bland eater was the most difficult thing. We got off the plane in Austin, rented a car, and got ourselves to San Antonio, where the conference was, and driving down the highway, we kept stopping at these places like, you know, Outback Steakhouse, and Mary's like, they'll have a salad, and we get there, and every salad has meat, and so we left, and like, we went somewhere else, and then when we got to San Antonio in the city, Mary's like, ooh, how about this restaurant? Oh, fish tacos, and blah, 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 and Kathy's like, yeah, I'll try it, and she was a sport. She tried everything. She found something at every restaurant, but like, I just said, I am odd man out in every way in this triplet of people. I will eat anywhere.
Yeah.
And I will.
I'll eat anything. I will try anything once. I love trying new things. I mean, I it's weird because I say I'm not a foodie, but I'm also very open to any kind of food. I think some of my best food experiences happened in Hawaii when I visited my friend there. And just I had some of the most wonderful, fresh, amazing amazingness. Yeah, so best experience for me eating probably was Hawaii. But like, I think the interesting part of that, the other interesting part of that question.
Yeah, the way Hallie phrased it.
Right, was the whole, your choices of food while you're traveling.
Yes.
While you're getting from point A to point B.
I agree
with
that too.
So Sarah, what is like your staple?
Crunchwrap Supreme. I don't even have to think about it.
What's that?
It's at Taco Bell. It's terrible. I never was allowed to eat Taco Bell growing up. But a Crunchwrap Supreme is the penultimate travel food. Because
the penultimate?
It's like,
the second to last?
Yeah.
The second to last.
Damn it.
The last food I eat is always, that's a mystery.
It's like when I say
the second to last.
I'm an English teacher on summer vacation, so I keep using words wrong. But
if you were
Beth,
you would have told me to suck it three times right now.
To me, it's like, it's a soft taco. It's a crunchy taco. It has, you know.
It's all soft.
It's made for driving.
It's your travel food.
It is the perfect.
It signifies travel.
When you're traveling by yourself, it is the easy, it's like one of the easiest things to eat and drive.
I always pack an apple or a piece of, like, hearty fruit, and then I will say, I do it because I want to look like that guy who eats an apple while traveling, and some of the time I don't actually eat it because I see, like, you know, junky terminal food, and it's like, a milkshake, that's a better lunch than my apple. Yeah. I'm sure I could find some hummus somewhere, but who wants that?
No.
I just eat, like, comfort food that helps me sleep on the rest of the flight.
Yep. Yeah.
My sister, who is a very healthy eater, she's not, you know, she can eat dessert. She's an everything in moderation person. Mm-hmm. She's not, you know, strict, no sugar, no whatever. But she's a healthy eater. But one of the reasons that I love road tripping with her is that when we road trip, the healthy eating goes out the window.
her
snack of choice, which she never buys unless she's road tripping, is combos. So I will get a Coke.
They're vile.
I love them.
Oh,
but only when
combos.
I'm traveling.
They remind me of
only
dog
when
treats.
I'm traveling.
Yeah.
When I'm traveling.
They smell like pepperoni.
Yeah. And they look, there are dog treats that literally
look like
combos.
So
yeah.
Maybe I should get dog treats too, because I'm going to and beef jerky. Beef jerky, like, comes like that kind of stuff. So bad
you
for you.
You become a wonderful redneck when you travel.
I do.
Possum jerky, if I can get it.
Oh my God. I've had deer jerky, I've had venison jerky, and Lord Almighty, was it
like
good?
Venison jerky
is so good. Oh my gosh, venison is delicious.
If I didn't kill it myself and try it in my garage, I do not want to eat it on road trip in my truck.
Yeah, so I think like, I just feel like when it's road, especially when it's road tripping, flying different for me, but when it's road tripping, all food rules go out the window.
Or like peanut butter M&Ms, just a giant
bag. That's
a good road trip snack.
And I have to have a huge iced coffee, even if it means I have to stop more to pee. I need it.
It's great. So our last question today is from Johan. Since we miss him.
I miss you, Johan.
The question he asked us was, why do I always pick the slowest security lane?
They see you coming. And they're like, let's fuck with this guy.
I think maybe it's not even that he picks the slowest one. He just picks an average. He doesn't get lucky with picking the quickest one. You probably don't even notice if you're in the longest one because you've made a new best friend by the time you get felt up by a TSA agent.
Mm-hmm.
Since you talk to strangers in lines.
or I'm live tweeting my experience.
Live tweeting. Guy just took off his belt. Not in a sexy way.
But he's kind of hot. Gave him my number.
Everyone should be wearing slip-on shoes.
At 6'4", I can see how quickly all the lanes are going,
great.
And I do pick the quickest, usually.
Yeah, that's nice.
I'm not a flyer, so I have nothing to add, except that if you're a frequent driver like me and you don't have Easy Pass, you have problems.
I don't understand people who don't have that. I will not take the diplomatic one on this one.
No.
If you don't have an Easy Pass, even if you're not a frequent driver.
I never had an Easy Pass.
What is wrong with you?
I know.
Oh, I just like making a new best friend every time I pay my toll.
Bullshit. That's what my roommate used to say.
I just have nice conversations with the toll people
they're
for
so
20
pleasant.
Minutes while I'm standing.
I hope you stub your toe later.
I didn't even know when I first got an Easy Pass that you got discounted tolls.
It's discounted.
Yeah.
You pay less on tolls because you're saving the money.
But even when I didn't know that, I thought it was bullshit that people didn't have Easy Pass.
Because the time it saves.
Yes.
You can get them at the stands.
Sometimes when I'm driving, like if I'm on the Mass Pike going to like Martha's Vineyard and it's like really heavy vacation traffic and I'm like driving through the 55 express lane, I just hold up my middle finger the whole time I'm driving by those poor suckers who don't have Easy Pass. Boom.
I remember when Easy Pass first came out, my friend Colin in high school, Colin Powers, got a whole bunch of magnets at the fair and picked off the P and just claimed that they were marketing
Easy
a new
ass.
Laxative.
Love it.
Now, Sarah, what you don't know is that Johan does our podcast episode wrap-up.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to give us
a
summary / words of wisdom, final thought on
travel.
Episode...
Mm-hmm. No pressure.
On our episode about travel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what we learned today is that the most important thing about traveling is what you eat and with whom you eat it.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this number 14. We're just racking them up.
Our podcast is an angsty teen.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Our podcast is a ninth grader.
Today's theme, of course, was about travel. We want to thank everybody who sent in topics and suggestions and questions. As always, you make this podcast possible. I am your host, your happy, happy host, Beth Hicks. I was joined today by
Scott Austin
and our very special guest,
Sarah Reif.
Everyone, safe traveling, whether by plane, train, or automobile.
Peace the fuck out, bitches.
Just the tip.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great.